Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, we have some more French Open semi-finalists. We found a few of them yesterday, and today the lineup is confirmed. It'll be Casper Ruud, who we've just watched toil through four sets against Holger Rune. He'll take on Marin Cilic, the resurgent Marin Cilic, in the semi-finals in a couple of days' time. And in the women's, it'll be the world number one Iga Świątek to take on Daria Kasatkina, the 20th seed, I think also resurgent. I'm going to use that word about her as well. They will face off in a semi-final tomorrow. Of course, both women's semi-finals to be played tomorrow, Thursday, here in Paris. It's a mere 1 a.m. podcast team.
Yeah.
We're all fresh as spring daisies.
We could go out.
David did say earlier, do you want to go out for dinner? And Matt was like, we've got to watch Rune Ruud, David.
Yeah.
Calm down.
I got overruled. Overruned.
Didn't quite work that,
did it?
It
was almost a joke there.
You should have gone with Ruud, not Rune.
I kind of didn't intend to go with either. Mm. And then I thought, ooh, this works.
I mean, it's still a late finish, isn't it? It just doesn't feel like a late finish because relatively it's nothing in the scheme of things.
Yeah, this time yesterday we were wrapped up in a tie break on the court. Philippe Chatrier, still about 2 hours away from actually podcasting.
So true. And there will that will end up coming up, folks. Many of you will know that Amélie Mauresmo gave a press conference this morning at 10 a.m.,
A quick word for Catherine there, I think.
That's a sigh for the scheduling. Yeah. And we will be talking about it in quite some detail later, but we want to talk about the tennis first. And I think we should lead with the world number one, Iga Świątek, because the banana skins keep being presented to her and she keeps daintily and elegantly dancing around them and pressing right on.
And I think I'm maybe more impressed with her as a result, because we've already seen her do the demolition job where she just sort of sweeps all before her as though they're not even there. And this is a different challenge altogether, and it's three rounds in a row where this has been the case. First, Danka Kovanec, who won, what was it, 9 games in their match a few days ago. And then we had Zhang Qinwen, who won a set, an hour and a half long 7-6 set, which could so easily have rocked Świątek's confidence, because she played well in that set, and usually when she plays well in a set, it's 6-1 at worst. So then she comes in and plays Jessica Pegula. Now, I commentated on the first set, and that was nip and tuck all the way through, and she was not hitting top gear, I didn't think, but she was playing well enough. But Pegula just wouldn't go away. And I just think that's really impressive when a player like Świątek is on this incredible run. What is it, 33 match wins in a row now? Mm. You know, you need to find a way mentally to handle that, to handle the fact that so many people are already handing her the title. And then when a player like Pegula steps up and stays with you and puts scoreboard pressure on you, if you find a way to win that, hats off, and she did.
Yeah, I felt it was quite an impressive performance from Świątek. I was reading quite a lot of chat, mainly on Twitter, that maybe she wasn't playing that well, and it was quite a patchy performance, I think lots of people were thinking. And I guess, you know, there were moments where she made quite a lot of errors, but I just think she's set the standard so high that anything that doesn't quite meet virtually perfection, we can sometimes think, oh, Świątek's not playing that well. But actually, if you look at her numbers in that match, it was really impressive. She performed at a high level. And Jessica Pegula is someone who kind of has weapons to hurt her. And it was a tricky match, as you've both said. So for her to come through it losing, what, 5 games, I think, is just yet another measure of how impressive she is, really.
Well, consider me put back in my box then, because I've written down as a question here, is it potentially a problem that's been 2 rounds that she hasn't played her best tennis? But and maybe I'm looking for weaknesses in Świątek just to make this interesting.
I think it is interesting, actually, and whilst I give her credit for getting through these rounds, and I think that is impressive in its own right, it's still not the same as destroying the opposition, which she did 2 years ago. That would be more of a statement. That would strike more fear, I think. The streak that she's on is just an incredible run, but I don't think Kasatkina will be scared.
No, I agree, and I'm skipping around here, but I think we'll really be able to tell if she gets to the final, because we know how she plays finals. You know, she thrashes people in finals. If she goes down an early break in a final or is really pushed in the first set, I think that will be a sign that she's maybe tight and nervous, or, you know, whoever she plays there is really bringing it. And how does she deal with that situation? Because, you know, all the big finals she's played, she's just jumped out to an early lead and run away with it. So that, I think, will be a real test. But obviously there's a big one in the semi-final as well.
And we will talk about that in a moment. I just want to stay on Świątek just a little bit. It would definitely be harsh to suggest that she's playing badly or way off her best. She's just not, as you say, David, she's just not demolishing all before her, like we've seen in a lot of those 33 wins that she's put together in that streak. But goodness me, she's come such a long way in such a short period of time, Matt, because I was thinking today about the Australian Open, where she had a great run. She lost in the semi-finals, didn't she? But throughout that tournament, throughout that run, the theme psychologically in her press conferences was her desperation to overcome her perfectionism, wasn't it? And to learn how to win ugly, and to learn how to mentally cope with the concept of winning ugly. And look, 3-2 over Pegula today, it was not ugly, but it was not perfect by any standards. It could have been the sort of performance, I think, that in Świątek years gone by, make it sound like she's been around for donkey's years, she's 20 years old, but or 21
now.
Sorry, it's her, well, it was her birthday. And
she forgot, don't worry, she wrote the wrong age on the camera.
Yes, she somehow thought she was another year older. She wrote 22. I think maybe she's just got Rafa Nadal's 22 in her mind.
Do you know, I've just realised how much Taylor Swift potential there is yes. in that record going to be revisited potentially on Sunday, folks.
You might have to explain that to me.
There's a very famous, very wonderful Taylor Swift song called 22.
Oh, okay. I mean, Iga Świątek was missing. She's missing more, but she's going for a lot. You know, there's not many rally balls going on. You know, she is rallying, but I actually think her opponents are playing better. I think that's the main reason she's not destroying them. Actually, I think they're standing up and thinking that they can take her on.
That's such a good point about rally balls. Every shot feels like it has a purpose.
Oh, yeah.
With Iga Świątek.
There's a point, yeah.
When I haven't played tennis much recently, but when I used to play with my brother quite a lot, he'd say, why aren't you trying to win the point? Why are you? And I'm sort of thinking, well, I'm just quite enjoying hitting nice tennis balls, you know, just sort of pleased with myself that I'm keeping it in.
She didn't try and do that
sort
against
of
me.
Nishikori Pablo Carreño Busta style.
Oh my God, you're Pablo Carreño Busta.
Turns out I might be.
She was trying to absolutely knock the living daylights out of it when she played me.
She was coached by her brother by then.
Specific situation. But yeah, Matt's like, try and win the point with your shots. And That's what she's trying to do. I mean, this is such basic analysis, isn't it? Świątek is trying to win the point when she hits tennis balls. But, you know, Pablo Carreño Busta, Kei Nishikori, it is not.
I saw her do something today that I haven't seen before, and a reaction from her opponent as a result. And that was the kind of Rafael Nadal walk off to the side, fiddle about with the towel, and then walk back again, whilst holding up the opponent's serve. And Jessica Pegula was getting wound up by it, and she had a word with the umpire about it at the end of the first set.
She has a few moves, Świątek, that she wouldn't get away with so well if she weren't delightful, I think. Was it her last round match that we were watching, Matt? Yes, it was. It was the Zheng Chen Wen match, where it was in the second set, maybe even the third set, in fact, and Zheng missed a smash, a very easy smash. Matt's sort of thinking, oh my God, I've seen so many people miss so many smashes this week. It feels like a running theme whenever we sit down on a court, someone hits a smash that bounces before it still reaches the net.
Still thinking about Ons Jabeur's on first Sunday of the tournament.
Pretty much the first shot we saw hit was Ons Jabeur missing a smash. Anyway, Zheng missed an absolute sitter, and Świątek did a sort of pirouette fist pump right into the air. And it was a pretty aggressive celebration.
What was your take?
I was going to say there was a moment today where I think...
Well, she hit a passing shot. She chased down a drop shot. And this is break point. This is what sealed the break of serve in the first set. Chased down a drop shot, hit the most miraculous little dink cross court, except that when we saw the replay, it was a double bounce. And the umpire had missed it. I assume Świątek didn't realise she'd done it. I'm hoping that's the case. Pegula didn't seem to clock it either. But then on the big screen, they showed it. And I reckon that both player, umpire and an opponent all weren't looking at the big screen at that point. Because if they had been, that would have been a big row. Because, I mean, they played in the stadium that she'd just broken serve to win the set with a double bounce passing shot.
Don't want to go all debating VAR on our listeners, but that is an example of tennis looking incredibly silly, isn't it?
Showing
that the technology is there, and the totally uncontroversial technology is there, and it's just not being used for reasons unknown.
Yeah, I don't understand it. And even more so that it has been trialled and it's been
very
shown to work, and yet it hasn't been brought in.
Pegula talk about it.
Pegula talked about it. Świątek talked about it. Świątek said that she was so focused on trying to get the ball, she didn't realise that it was a double bounce, and, you know, it is ultimately up to the umpire to call it. Jessica Pegula, it was sort of halfway through her press conference, one of the journalists said, I want to talk to you about the three all point. And she went, oh yeah, the double bounce. She sort of, she knew what it was. But again, I don't think she was blaming Świątek. I mean, personally, from the small amount of tennis I've played, I tend to think the player does know or should know, really. I think it's easier for the player to tell than the umpire, probably.
Is it like batsman getting a nick?
Exactly.
Yeah, you always know.
But it can be very, very tight. And yeah, I do think a replay is the solution.
If it's virtually a half volley, maybe you don't quite know whether you've got underneath it or stubbed it.
Stubbed it into the ground.
Yeah. Mm.
Just on Jessica Pegula, before we move on to Świątek's semi-final opponent, is this her ceiling here? I mean, obviously, you know, freak things can happen, opportunities arise, you never know. But generally speaking, in a normal Grand Slam, she's somebody that we've endless respect for. We know she's absolutely maxing out on all of her potential. She's rinsing it, isn't she? Is there more to come? Or is she maxing it right now? Is sort of reaching quarterfinals and doing so with the impressive consistency that she's doing, is this peak Jessica Pegula?
I'd say she's probably getting the most out of her game I think, you know, she's likely going to be top 10 in the world after this tournament, which is incredible. Mm. And she talked about that, you know, 10 in the world. You know, she really paused and took in the significance of that. And she spoke about how, you know, she used to worry about trying to break top 100. And then when you break it, you think, oh, what was I worrying about? It wasn't that hard. So I really think she's maximizing her game. I do think she could have better results still, because I think she could get better draws. You know, she lost to Ash Barty in the Australian Open quarterfinal, world number one at the time. She's now lost to Iga Swiatek, world number one here. If she can avoid the world number ones, she's as consistent as anyone at these big events.
Put it this way, she's as good as Daniel Collins. And Daniel Collins reached a final.
I think so. And also, I just, you know, just generally on Pegu, I went to her press conference and Chris Clary was there, and, you know, it was a sort of kind of audience with Jessica Pegula for about 20 minutes. She spoke on a lot of different subjects, and Chris Clary tweeted that she's one of the best interviews in tennis at the moment because she's funny and expansive and thoughtful. And I thought she gave a really interesting analysis of what it's like to play Iga Swiatek. I asked her about playing her on clay versus playing her on a hard court, and also just generally the challenge. And she said something which I've only heard players say in relation to Rafael Nadal before, in that he hits such a specific ball that you can't really train for it, you can't really practice for it, and you're just faced with it on the match court for the first time, and suddenly you've got to deal with it, and it's quite overwhelming. And she said that Iga Swiatek's the same, basically, for her, that her ball is different, her intent on the shots is different. And she actually compared it to Ash Barty. She said Barty was like that. That was a one-off game. No one else played like Barty with the slice. And she said, I just find it really difficult to have to play them in matches when I'm not used to playing them. So maybe if she plays them a bit more, she would get more success against them. But, yeah, I think she's a really astute analyst, I think, of the game, and that really came across in her press conference.
That is fascinating analysis. Swiatek would just so love to hear that, wouldn't she? Any kind of similarity drawn between her and Rafael Nadal, she's framing that and popping it up in the bedroom. In her semi-final, Iga Swiatek will face the 20th seed Daria Kasatkina, who of course has been a quarterfinalist here before, some years ago now, into the semi-finals for the first time. Had to work for it today. Straight set 6-4, 7-6 over fellow Russian Veronika Kudermetova. I watched the opening stages of this, and Kudermetova came out playing really well, timing the ball so well, didn't look nervous, and obviously has the greater power and sort of obvious weaponry of the two. And I was thinking, oh God, how's Kasatkina going to win points here? You know, she just hasn't got the arsenal. This looks like a total mismatch, but she just kept her cool and she just weaves a little web, doesn't she?
Sums it up perfectly. And she manages a three-set match the way men manage five-set matches in some ways. Because she doesn't panic. She's happy to take it into the middle stages of a set and then establish herself and back the fact that a player won't be able to hit winners long enough. I mean, this is while she's playing really well. She's had a couple of years in the wilderness in some regards. I mean, if you think back in 2018 or so, there was a lot of excitement around her. She was up there with Naomi Osaka in finals and all that sort of thing. So it's great to see her playing her best tennis again and winning matches, hardly losing games, because she does have a bewitching style of play. And I think today it was harder work. It was a bit more like Swiatek's had to get through the last couple of rounds, but she didn't panic. You know, she kept in there. It was only when she was, I think, about 6-1 up in the tiebreak in the second set, and suddenly the arm just tightened and went like lead, and you could see, here's a woman on the brink of going where she's never gone before. And she doesn't know whether she can handle it. She was just hitting rally balls into the outside edge of the tram lines.
Yes, it's one of my favourite things in tennis, I think, to watch someone try and accomplish something they've never done before. And we saw it quite a lot today with, you know, three of the four singles winners anyway. And yeah, that phase in the tiebreak was very much Kasatkina going through it. But actually, she finished it on a wonderful point. She constructed it and threw in one of her trademark drop shots, which Kudermetova couldn't get to. And I just found it interesting how, as you said at the start of the match, it looked like it was favouring Kudermetova because she had the power advantage. But just slowly, Kasatkina, I wouldn't say took control, but just kind of turned into the sort of opponent that Kudermetova didn't like playing because she was mixing the spins and
sort of laid traps for her, didn't
exactly,
she?
And the flight of the ball and the placement and the speed, and suddenly Kudermetova had no rhythm to hit her shots, and it was just interesting how she did it sort of almost silently, just as the match went on. It just sort of happened because that's kind of the sort of crafty style of tennis that Kasatkina plays. It's always great to watch her.
She's lost fewer sets this tournament than Iga Świątek, as Daria Kasatkina, and that is precisely zero. This was by far the most she's been troubled in any of her five matches so far. I was getting quite excited about the prospect of Świątek against Kasatkina. I had gone quite far on the hype train about that in my mind, and then I looked at the head-to-head.
And it's a very recent head-to-head.
Yes, it's not just losses, it's seriously one-sided losses.
How many
losses.
Is it?
Well, it's 3-1 overall to Świątek, but all three wins that Świątek's had have been this year. Australia, Dubai and Doha. So arguably, you know, before Świątek really hit her stride. And the set scores 6-2, 6-3, 6-1, 6-2, 6-3, 6-love.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I disembarked the hype train.
And Iga Świątek was asked in her press conference whether she thinks it'll be any different on clay, because that's Kasatkina's favourite surface. And Iga said, it's my favourite surface too.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I think Kasatkina is going to win a set.
On the basis of...
Well, you said this is before Świątek became Świątek. I'd say this is before Kasatkina became Roland Garros.
Yeah.
Not lost a set, Kasatkina.
And that's what Kasatkina said as well. She said, I'm in very different shape to what I was in 3 or 4 months ago. I was speaking to Pam Shriver about the match, and she's worried about Kasatkina's serve versus the Świątek return.
I like the way you developed a sound for the name drop, just as you do it.
Yeah, he gave us a little moment there, and the listeners, to just let that sink in.
Yeah.
I'm still letting it sink in.
Yes, I'm concerned about that too, and I think Kasatkina probably ought to be. I really want it to be good, and there's a world in which it is. It's a great contrast, but that head-to-head really does worry me.
Speaking of the serve and speaking of Pam Shriver, another thing that came up in our little chat was that in the match today, Kudermetova took a medical timeout at 6-5 in the second set, just as Kasatkina was about to serve to stay in the match. I think she'd already served for the match and got broken. There were, you know, some questions over whether that was a fair time to take a medical timeout. But Pam actually felt it helped Kasatkina because she went out and practiced her serve while Kudermetova was taking the medical timeout. And apparently she found her rhythm on the serve, upped her speeds on the serve while she was practicing it, and then came out and served really well for the remainder of the match, which I thought was quite interesting analysis.
If this was a final, I'd say straight sets, classic Świątek. But because it's a semi-final, I feel differently.
It's interesting. One of the bits of analysis that Daniela Hantikova always says and always really resonates with me when I work with her on Prime is that the semi-final is the hardest match to play and the hardest match to win. You reach the final and, you know, that is an achievement in itself. You might end up with the plate, but, you know, you're a finalist. And I guess it's, you know, like playing the bronze medal match, isn't it? There's sort of the chance of leaving with effectively nothing. I guess it's the biggest gulf in outcomes, being a finalist and losing semi-finalist. Mm. And yeah, of course, she had one Grand Slam semi-final experience, which I think still haunts her to this day, against Anna Ivanovic at the Australian Open. But that really sticks with me, and I, you know, you could say we said before the tournament, didn't we, that maybe the biggest obstacle in Świątek's way is herself, and that remains the case in every single match that she'll play, and it will remain the case against Kazakhina, regardless of the absolutely horrifying head-to-head. It's not great bigging up of that match, is it? But
I thought I did a good quite good job.
You can't argue with the numbers, folks. I really was on board the hype train, but then, yeah, I appreciate that, David. So Iga Świątek and Daria Kazakhina will play their semi-final first on tomorrow. That is, of course, because Coco Gauff was in doubles action today with Jessica Pegula. Did they win, Matt?
They did win, and they meet Madison Keys and Taylor Townsend in the semi-finals, an all-American match.
That's really cool.
Match.
Great.
Yeah, really, and Taylor Townsend went to Jessica Pegula's wedding. It's all great.
Oh, loveliness. Can I propose Kagula?
Oh.
As a team name?
Who'd have thought a raincoat would become a team name?
It literally just came to me. I haven't spent all day thinking about it. I've spent all day thinking about other things, folks, because as I mentioned earlier, 10 a.m. this morning, after 4 hours sleep, off I popped to speak to Amélie Mauresmo. She made herself available to the media for the first time this tournament, and it was kind of a now or never situation, wasn't it? And we had questions that we wanted to ask her, very, very pressing questions. So off I went to that press conference. She took questions in French first. There was a lot of questioning about the lateness of the night session finishes, the lateness of the night session starts. Last night was obviously particularly severe with Nadal and Djokovic, and we got a small flavour of this, didn't we? There was a real situation outside the grounds and on the surrounding roads with people, you know, public transport had closed at that point, and for those that had arrived on public transport, they couldn't get taxis, they couldn't get Ubers. Those that they could get were charging them an absolute fortune. We helped a British woman that we bumped into getting into a cab, and well, she was getting fleeced, wasn't she? But she needed to get home. Anyway, lots of questions about all of those sorts of things. Handled with, not quite sure of the word, sort of a very naive touch, I would say. There was a real humanity to her demeanour, Amélie Mauresmo's, in the press conference. There was no attempt to deflect or defend, really. She seemed extremely open. She didn't seem like a politician up there. But equally, some of the answers to her questions were extremely unsatisfying. You know, she said the issue of public transport issues just had not occurred to her before this year. She said, yeah, of course we'll look at it for future years. It's something that we hadn't even thought of, which is fantastically naive, I think. Anyway, the question that I wanted to ask her, I'm sure won't come as any surprise to you at all, about the one night session women's match out of the 10 scheduled. I said, I know you said you have no regrets about that, which is something that Mauresmo had said in the French portion of her press conference. But when that session is billed as the match of the day, are you comfortable with the message that sends about women's tennis? And Amélie Mauresmo answered thus: in this era that we are in right now, I don't feel, and as a woman, former women's player, I don't feel bad or unfair saying that right now you have more attraction, more attractivity, can you say, appeal. She was searching for the right word in English. That's the general for the men's matches. My goal was, when I was doing the schedule every day, to try and see from the first round when the draw came out, to try and see what match in the women's draw can I put there. honestly, the confrontation or the star that I could put there. So that was tough. Honestly, I did really consider every day, most of the days, trying to see all of the team. We were really focused on this most of the time. But yes, I admit it was tough. It was tough for more than one night to find the match of the day. When you have this, it's an interesting one because, as I was saying, the fact that it's right now a one-match night session is tough. I then said, in a similar vein, 18 out of the 20 matches scheduled first on Longnen and Châtrier this fortnight, which is traditionally the slot that gets the weakest crowd and TV audiences, 18 out of 20 of those women's matches have been women's matches. Is that something you would look to change? And she said, well, I didn't know the number. To be honest, it's day by day, but it's a good point. Yes, in the future, knowing that number now, which I didn't pay attention to be honest, during these 10 days, is something to take into consideration for sure. Now, I don't think I'm particularly naive about this kind of thing. I didn't expect to go to that press conference and hear strident feminism, but I did not expect to hear that at all. I was pretty astonished and flabbergasted and depressed, really, about what I heard there. I mean, the sentiment of her first answer is pretty similar to that was expressed by former Indian Wells tournament director Ray Moore in 2016, after which he was roundly criticised and forced to step down from his role. She's saying there is more appeal to men's matches. I could not find any other women's matches in 10 days that I considered to be the match of the day. And in terms of the answer to the second question, we know that Amélie Mauresmo is aware of the fact that the first match of the day is the graveyard slot. We know that she's aware of that. Marion Bartoli was telling us that that was one of her key priorities to address, getting crowds in for those opening matches. So if she was genuinely unaware of those numbers, the fact that 18 out of 20 times that graveyard slot was being filled by women and some extremely high-ranked, eye-catching women, then the only appropriate reaction is to think, wow, there's got to be some serious unconscious bias going on here then. How can I correct that? And I don't get the impression from today that Amélie Mauresmo even recognises the concept of unconscious bias or the difference between equity and equality. And I really try latterly, haven't always, but I really try and with your guidance, David, deal with this kind of thing with as light a touch as possible and humour wherever possible, because no one likes an angry, ranty woman, do they? And I guess it's some learnings from Billie Jean King about you've just got to take whatever approach is most effective. But I feel really angry and ranty today. It's sunk me into a not even particularly sexy French depression, quite frankly. Look, the structures within tennis are not naturally occurring. Like most long-standing institutions in society, they have been designed and upheld by almost exclusively men. They are rigged to favour men, to perpetuate the status quo, and to create male biased forces that people are so depressingly keen and quick to surrender to. We are not at the mercy of market forces. We are the market forces. We determine them. Our choices create them. And to anyone thinking or saying Amélie's only speaking the truth or saying what others are thinking but too afraid or not able to say, you might be right. The views that Amélie voiced today are depressingly commonplace. I'm extremely aware of that. My Twitter mentions are proof of that. I have done some muting today for the sake of my sanity. But unless you believe that inherently, from first principles, female athletes are less capable or impressive or appealing than men, and if you do, then get in the bin, then your preference for men's tennis is the product of a system designed to create preferences and induce choices that uphold the status quo, where men are treated as superior and more valuable. A system that devotes less airtime, less energy, less money, less respect to women. Each individual making their decisions, who to put on a poster, who to put first in a TV running order, who to schedule where. They might think that they're doing so in good faith, treating men and women equally. But it's incumbent on these decision makers, and I include us in that. It's something that we're conscious of when, you know, we look at the time that we've devoted to men's and women's tennis on this podcast, and we don't always get it right, but we are always conscious on it. And it's incumbent on all of us to recognise the bigger picture, the unconscious biases, the difference between equity and equality, and the role that we play in a rigged system and the weight that those individual decisions carry. And for 15 years now, the Big Three has been used as an excuse for consistent favouring of male players. Before that, there was a different excuse, and there will be new ones after Nadal, Federer and Djokovic have retired. I promise you there will be. Of course, there have been individual instances, many of them over the years, when it's been completely legitimate to give highest billing to the Big Three or give them airtime ahead of other players, men or women. You know, last night, Nadal Djokovic, a perfect example of that. But this situation was no better before the Big Three, and I fear after today that it will be no better after they're gone. The unquestionable match of round one at this tournament was Naomi Osaka against Amanda Anisimova. And how quick and relieved was everyone to identify Japanese TV demands as the reason for that being scheduled first on Longlin. And maybe that was a factor. I'm quite sure that was the case and it was a factor. But undoubtedly, a bigger factor is a tournament director and an organisation which views women as less appealing. It viewed that match as less appealing than Novak Djokovic demolishing Yoshihito Nishioka for the loss of four games, a scoreline that surprised absolutely no one. And in the words of Hannah Wilkes, beloved Hannah on Twitter today, reasons will always be found to treat women's tennis as inferior, to blame the product and disclaim responsibility. I'm no longer interested in people's reasons du jour. I have a few more things to say. Our choices don't exist in a vacuum. Why would any French person be motivated to get a ticket to watch Martina Trevisan tomorrow when the coverage they've watched of her so far, and I haven't watched every minute of French TV coverage this week, but I watched Martina Trevisan's semi-final yesterday against Leila Fernandez. The coverage they've watched of her so far has failed to tell them who she is, why they should care about her, why she's interesting, why she's a bloody inspiration more than any of that. After her win yesterday, there wasn't even analysis on French TV, just as there wasn't after Świątek's win today. They moved immediately on to reflect back on last night and look ahead to Cilic versus Rublev. Maybe people are, on the whole, less interested in Martina Trevisan than they are in Alexander Zverev, say, or Marin Cilic. You know, insert name here. Maybe that is a fact. But if it is, it is not, because Martina Trevisan is inherently less interesting, less compelling, less appealing a tennis player, or less worthy of our time, attention or respect. It's because the system has let her down and let tennis fans down and let women's tennis down. And to think that that betrayal is being validated and spearheaded by a former WTA number one is so unbelievably grim that I had to go into a sexy French depression that wasn't very sexy. Tsitsipas 2019 style. Hoodie on. Yep. Headphones over the hoodie. Matt went to the press conferences and asked Świątek and Pegula about the comments.
I did. Well, Simon Briggs got there before me with Iga Świątek. He got the question in. And I don't know what I was expecting. I was like you, Catherine. I was very angry about these comments from Mauresmo, and I think I probably wanted some of that anger reflected in how Iga Świątek spoke about it and how Jessica Pegula spoke about it. But of course, you know, they're playing the tournament, and this is one of the things which really gets me about this. I hate having to go into these press conferences and ask these women to talk about having to justify their own appeal. You know, men never have to do that. I want to talk about tennis with these players. So I absolutely get why they answered the questions the way they did. And fair play to both of them. They both said it was disappointing to hear it, especially from someone like Mauresmo. And that's one of the most damaging and depressing things about this, I think, is that Mauresmo saying this will be used by sexists as a way to defend their opinion. Oh, well, Mauresmo thinks it, so we're all right to think it. It's incredibly damaging, I think, what Mauresmo has said today, given who she is and her position. And her lack of understanding that she, as the tournament director of one of the most important tournaments in the world, has the power to influence the perception of the relative value or appeal of women's tennis, is staggering to me, how she doesn't seem to have cottoned onto that and figured that out, that she is playing a role in creating the stars. And how can women's tennis possibly have as many stars as men's tennis if they're constantly in the worst slots? So, yeah, very, very well said, Catherine, and I feel the same way.
David, you went to the WTA to get a response from them about it. They said the following: the generation and depth of talent we are currently witnessing in the sport is incredible. Our fans want to see the excitement and thrill of women's tennis on the biggest stages and in the premium time slots. There is certainly room for improvement, and if we want to build the value of our combined product, then a balanced match schedule is critical in providing that pathway.
I would say that is a very polite, very corporate way of saying we are furious with what we have heard today.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. And they haven't said that to me, but that's my reading of it. And look, Emily Mauresmo is new in the job. I hope she will reflect on what she said and the reaction to what she said and realise that she's got this horribly wrong. Because look, I won't go and just repeat everything Matt just said, but the truth is it is damaging. It's terribly damaging because of all those reasons that you've just highlighted. She's a salesperson for this tournament. She's a salesperson for women's tennis. She's got an opportunity to big it up. And I always come back to feeling like this. Just believe in your product. Just believe in the sport. It isn't just about stars. We saw it at the Australian Open. We all made such a fuss about Novak Djokovic getting deported. And within 2 days, we'd kind of forgotten about it. And we were getting on with the tennis tournament. They're going to retire. Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, they're not going to be here for that much longer. It's going to be Casper Ruud. It's going to be Andre Rublev. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of this assumption that if you stick these people on, if you stick women on in the evening session, people won't want to watch it. They bloody will want to watch it. If you just put it on and believe in it, and you've sold the ticket, you've sold the media rights, put it on. Get the timings right so that you don't have a 48-minute match and everybody thinking that they haven't had value for money. Put two matches on back-to-back. Or make it best of five set, same format for men and women, as we keep talking about. But believe in your product, because your product, at its best, is combined. It is men and women playing tennis tournaments at the same time. Women's tennis is the strongest sport in the world for women. And you're doing it down. You're doing down your own product, and something that frankly gave you a great career, Imagine how you would feel, Amelie, 15 years ago, if a tournament director had said that about you. I think you'd be devastated.
I think the tennis shoots itself in the foot round of the quiz is not going to have a lot of jeopardy at the end of 2022, is it? I think it's settled.
It's such a shame. We recorded an hour and a half show for Friends of the Tennis podcast that is available now, and we're still proud of it. It doesn't do down her achievements in her career. It's called the Amelie Mauresmo story. And this is a chapter that is added onto it. And it's so dispiriting to think that she's not what we thought she was. Now, I hope that's temporary. There's still time for her to she's new to this job. I understand all that. And she's not the only one either. But it is a kick in the guts.
Yeah. Very well put, David. It really is a kick in the gut.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Yeah, Amelie Mauresmo thought Holger Rune against Casper Ruud was the match of the day today, and it was quite a good match. Wasn't it? There were a few very good matches today. We just watched that this evening. Casper Ruud making it through to his first ever Grand Slam semi-final. Holger Rune showing us exactly how talented he is. I think he was running out of gas a little bit towards the end, wasn't he? But Casper Ruud was having a little bit of trouble getting over the finish line. Again, it's the Kazakhina thing of... You can almost see the moment when they allow realization to dawn of what they might be on the cusp of. You know, they perform these mental magic tricks on themselves during a match, don't they, to try and stay present and in the moment and one point at a time and to try and make themselves Rafael Nadal. But there comes a point where it overwhelms them.
Never done it before. And it's of all, there's so many beautiful things about sport, and tennis in particular is our sport. But the most delicious thing of the lot is seeing somebody stand on the brink of something they've never achieved before and finding out whether they can do it or not. And looking in their eye and seeing the terror, seeing the self-doubt, and them reckoning with that in front of your eyes and the millions at home and the people in the stands. We will never know what that feels like, but you can see it in their eyes. And when they do it, when they achieve it, I don't know, it's like watching a kid being born. It's just so, so exciting to see.
And we, obviously, he's at a very different career stage, but we kind of had the same thing with Marin Cilic today, didn't we? Far from his first rodeo, but his first French Open semi-final, and and possibly a Grand Slam semi-final that he might have thought he would never reach again. I think we all certainly did. You know, we discussed his potential contemplation of retirement a couple of nights ago. And when he squandered that one match point in the fifth set, I thought, uh-oh.
Mm, I think uh-oh. He did as well.
And, you know, I was looking him right in the eye thinking, is it there? I was looking for the flickers. And then into the tiebreak he goes, and it is there. And you're absolutely right, David. That is, it's one of the wonders, isn't it, of this sport, staring them down and finding out what they're made of.
He was awesome as well, by the way, at the end. It was a really patchy performance from both players, but then suddenly, from about, 3 points into that tiebreak, he played out of his mind, Cilic.
It was kind of the story of Cilic's career versus Rublev's career in terms of their achievements, you know, because Cilic, in the last few years, we have thought of as someone who gets very, very tight in big moments, but he has also reached Grand Slam finals. He's won the US Open. He has a gear change, or he has had a gear change traditionally throughout his career, and we're yet to see that from Rublev. You know, that he is a quarter finalist, or he's a ATP 500 level winner. You know, we haven't seen him step up, and I think we're still wondering whether he can. But Cilic, we know, can, and he did that, didn't he, in that final set tiebreak today. He just ripped it from Rublev and played a fantastic tiebreak. And I think we were talking to Tománi Karyol of The Guardian, who pointed out that he hit more than 50 winners than Rublev today. You know, he outwinnered Rublev, who hits the ball hard.
But he just hits it hard. He doesn't hit it
exactly
effectively hard a lot of the time.
And Cilic opens up the court better and hits it hard as well.
Rublev just has a foot to the floor level, and he doesn't. There's a glass ceiling there.
I think he's quite a thoughtful chap, Andre Rublev. I think there's quite a lot to him, but he plays very brainless tennis. And I don't, you know,
it's one dimensional.
Tennis brains and life brains are very, very different things. I don't know whether he can apply a bit more thought and strategy.
But he is limited. I mean, he had a go at a drop shot today. I mean, I laughed when he hit it. I mean, I don't mean to be mean to him, because he...
On air?
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a nice lad. He does, and I still can't watch the self-abuse that I see on the court from him without feeling terribly uncomfortable.
Was there any today?
Yeah, there was some. He held it together a lot better than he has in the past, and I also think he's very, very good at doing it and then moving on. Which I don't know how he does that. I mean, he smashes himself in the leg with his own racket, in the knee, and then he moves on. And he rants and he raves and then he moves on. But yeah, I mean, he had a go at a drop shot, and it was like, here you go, here's a mid-court forehand hit. Pop that away for a winner. Like he was feeding him.
What I was impressed with from Marin Cilic today was that he didn't play as well as he did against Daniil Medvedev. He wasn't in that purple patch, and yet he had to dig deeper. You know, it wasn't coming as easily. He had to get a bit gritty out there. He had to get his hands a bit dirtier, and there might have been moments where he thought, oh God, it's not quite happening today. Where's that tennis gone from two nights ago? And he's still, with all the mental baggage that he must have accumulated over the last 15 years, he still found a way across the line, and I really find that impressive.
Yeah. Me too. And I think maybe a little bit of it is because maybe he considered the end of his career, and then suddenly by not doing that, it feels like you maybe got one last chance, and just let's just go for it now. And I also just want to very quickly reference the delicious shake of the head from Casper Ruud,
yes,
on the handshake. Great from show. Holger Rune, who, by the way, is a heck of a talent. I mean, he showed flashes of it again tonight. What a ball striker that kid is.
He has talent leaking out his sides, as I think Mary Carrillo would say.
Yeah, he really does. And he's got a much quicker racket head speed than Ruud has, and he's got a better hand-eye coordination that I'm looking at.
Takes the ball early.
Yeah, he's going to be a special player if he can figure out his mind as well as his body, but mainly his mind. And then you're going to wind up players if you walk to the net and sort of slap their hands and look away and walk off, which he did. And Ruud just sort of looked at him and just shook his head as if to say, you little whatever.
Very annoying that he waited till that moment to let the aggro seep out.
Quite enjoyed it.
We'd been sitting here for 3 hours waiting for aggro. Casper Ruud, well known for saving his aggro for Twitter, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the thing with the little shake of the head. I thought, yeah, that's just perfect understated opinion right there.
So it'll be Casper Ruud against Marin Cilic in the semi-finals on Friday. We'll talk about that in tomorrow's show. We've talked about Świątek Kazatkina, which is first up tomorrow. We must just have a very, very quick chat about Trevisan against Goff, which is the second women's semi-final, which we obviously haven't had a chance to discuss. The double is on for Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
The singles doubles, Krejcikova double.
She's quietly become a massively exciting story for this tournament.
Mm.
Yeah, still needs to win 5 matches for it to happen. 3 in the doubles, 2 in the singles.
Well, if Feliciana Lopez can, Queens.
He did them all in one day for pretty much. It was funny listening to Jessica Pegula talk about Coco Gauff. She's just in awe. She's kind of like, God, she's, what is she, 19, 18? She was like, oh, she's so annoyingly good, basically. And I think most people have her as a pretty heavy favourite tomorrow against Trevisan. It's easy to underestimate Trevisan. You know, she's on a 10-match winning streak. That counts for a lot. You know, there's a lot of confidence there. They're both in a new situation. They're both going to have to face what we've talked about in this podcast of trying to do something they've never done before. I just have real faith in Gauff at the moment. I just think the game looks so good.
She's ready.
I think she's ready.
It's just dawned on me, Matt, that we're sitting in a room with somebody that picked a Świątek Gauff final.
Oh, yeah. That was me. Hasn't happened yet. I keep getting credit for the Alcaraz
pick. It's been a rough day, folks. It's been a rough day at the tennis.
People spent months saying, David did well picking Carlos Alcaraz for the title, didn't he? He hasn't won the blooming title. He's not even in semis. Anyway.
Just going to say it one more time. The Pliskova sisters.
Yeah. Understood.
Right, folks. I think that's quite enough from me for today, isn't it? Let's have a shiny, happy, pumped day tomorrow, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's have one of those. We, of course, have our mascot, Cooper.
All right, Cooper.
We love Cooper. Hello, Cooper. We have our mascots. We have Carter for me. We went for Kazatkina in 2, Carter, and we're feeling good about it. And Matt copied us, so Matt and Gerald.
These baseless accusations.
What prediction are you having, Catherine, he says.
Don't you know I've already put mine in?
Very rarely. Mm. Very rarely. David, you had Ruud in 4.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we've all scored.
Not
sure that's ever happened.
No, we haven't all scored. I got double your points, is what happened. So
you should have seen him.
Needed them.
You should have seen him cheering Holger Rune on in that second set and then switching allegiance faster than you can imagine. It was extraordinary. Billie Jean, the dog, is sponsored by Billie Jean, the human.
Hooray!
And Alana Kloss.
And they're here.
And they're here and they're going to be honoured. Well, Billie Jean is going to be honoured by Emily Mauresmo.
Yes, indeed. Mm. 50 years since she won the French Open title. Mm. Wonderful.
And she's also receiving the Légion d'honneur
from Macron
on Friday.
Cool.
They've made her trip worthwhile anyway. Nice. So hello to Billie Jean and
Macron
Alana.
Gets to meet Billie Jean. That's what's happening.
And we have our executive producers, Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner. They're both top blokes. And Matt, we have shout outs.
We do. We have Emily Ganko in Brisbane.
Whoa, I love Brisbane. Right, Emily.
My parents used to live in Brisbane.
Oh, I want to live in Brisbane.
Do you have any more details about where in Brisbane?
I'm going to get ahead of the shout-outs today and say I don't have many details today.
Okay.
Okay.
No further details.
Are there any tennis Emilys?
Emily Webley-Smith.
Emily Loire. Remember her?
Yes.
No.
Emily Loire.
French. Oh, come on, Matt. Oh,
Tell me more about Emily Loire.
Well, it just reminded me of my first ever Australian Open in 2003 when Jonathan Overend on BBC Radio said, imagine if Emily Loire married Lomano Trezor Loire Loire and she could become Emily Loire Loire Loire.
Oh, who's the next shout-out format?
Sorry.
The next one is Pierre Cantin, or perhaps Quentin,
Quentin,
from Montreal.
One half of a Pierre Hugues.
Yes.
I love Montreal. That is one of my favourite cities on the tennis tour.
Yeah, what's his name again?
In the world.
Pierre Cantin or Quentin, I'm not sure.
Pierre. All right, Pierre.
Also the home of poutine, which is a great food product.
Is it? What is it?
It's chips with gravy and cheese curds on.
You'd put vinegar on that as well, wouldn't you?
Don't say that until you... I don't... I do have a vinegar-only policy with chips, but not with poutine.
Right.
It doesn't go.
Okay.
Anyway, hello, Pierre.
Right, Pierre.
And finally, we have Helen Seekin, who is living in London.
Hello, Helen.
Oh, well, I also live in London.
Correct.
Great choice.
Very good choice.
At Tennis Helen's.
Helen Wills-Moody. From the early 1900s.
Suzanne Longland.
That's right.
Well, yes. How appropriate. Thank you very much, Helen, for your support. Thank you to all friends of the pod. Thanks to all of you for sitting through my rant today. I promise to be less ranty tomorrow and hopefully all days going forward, but it felt like it needed saying. And thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. Sign up for the newsletter if you haven't already. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Twitter. Hannah is doing magical work on there as always. Leave us an iTunes review. Tell your friends. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.